Hi, I'm Terry Meekan. Welcome to It's Our Business. It's Our Business are documentaries which get under the hood of companies and people to find out who they are, what they do, and how they do it. I'm at Strode Breweries, a name that goes back to the 1760s. But we're not going that far back in time, because I'm with Greg Pilley, the founder of the modern Strode Breweries. Greg, how did you get into the business?
It's a long story, but in summary, I've long had an interest in home brewing and started really home brewing at university, where the challenge was just to brew something that was drinkable. And then after that, I paid off my university debt and worked on a small farm and had the use of a little cottage and time, and really got into sort of full mash brewing, brewing from the raw ingredients at that time.
But just for your own consumption and local people that you knew, I mean, how big a scale was it then?
Well, it was small homebrew scale, but because my cottage was in the middle of nowhere, it was a good venue for parties and friends, so we'd brew beer for some parties. And then I didn't really get into brewing again until I arrived back in Stroud after many years of travelling. Domestic life and being a bit more settled allowed me to get back into it. And again, I brewed quantities on a homebrew scale far more than I could consume. So I had to start thinking about, well, how am I going to do something different?
Did you have to buy the name Strode Breweries? It does go back to the mid-1700s.
No, the old Stroud Breweries ceased trading in 1960s, after an amazing run of, like you say, 200 years. So it'd be great if any business these days would last 200 years, and I'd like to think ours would. But I don't know when it happened, but there was a time when company names were linked to a company registration, and that then stopped. So the names of companies are now completely separate to company registration.
It's obviously got the Strode connotation as well, so it has a good ring to it, Strode Breweries, as opposed to some sort of obscure brewery name.
Absolutely. When we were starting up, you know, there was the old brewery, and I was really conscious about trading under the same name and the sort of what people might think of that. But then after a great deliberation and a lot of other quite silly names, we decided to settle on Stroud Brewery, and it's the best thing we've ever done. For a small business like ours, and especially microbreweries, their local identity is everything. Just to do what it says on the tin and be a local brewery and based in Stroud, we've had so much support from local people, and many of those people remembered the old Stroud Brewery and were very pleased to see that.
You're still looking at the old Stroud Brewery prices.
Yes.
So let's take a look at the history of here at this site. So when did it start?
We did our first brew on the 29th of May 2006. And our launching brew was Budding, celebrating Edwin Budding, who invented the lawnmower. And the site that we're brewing from was the very site where those first lawnmowers were fabricated at Phoenix Works.
Now, you got the first brewer at that date, but obviously you had to get the capital in to build the brewery and to make it all work together. Now, how was that funded up?
That's quite a nice little story, actually. I mean, I had no money. I still don't. I essentially borrowed it. And I didn't borrow it from the banks. I borrowed it from a few friends. And I managed to raise a small amount of capital that I needed. I started very small, not in the site we're on now, and in a unit right next door
to this. When you say very small, is that like one barrel or something like that?
In brewer's terms, it was a five-barrel brewery, which meant that we could brew up to 20 firkins, which is the sort of standard barrel that you see outside a pub, in a single brew. You know, it's quite big scale to start on, but it soon got too small. So we started thinking about moving to our current site in 2009-2010. We started thinking about it. And you ask about finance. Again, at that time, I went back to those same friends who loaned me money and said, do you want your money back? I could do with holding on to it. They agreed to leave it invested in the brewery, and many of them said they would up it. So I came to the new site, invited those friends and some wider acquaintances. I did my Dragon's Den pitch. This was a Thursday evening. And by a Tuesday of the following week, I had offers of £60,000 in loans. And a fortnight later, I had a full £90,000, which is enough money to match a small grant that was available as well. And we had the full capital for the brewery without having to go to any bank at all.
And these venture capitalists that are in the business, are they shareholders, or are they just old loan notes?
No, it's essentially a loan to the brewery, so they're not shareholders. They don't have any
equity
in there, but they do get interest. They get 5% interest on their loan
and a sack of ale every year.
And some other benefits as well. They also get 20% discount of all the beer that they can.
The capital involved then to actually start what we now see is the manufacturing process at the back there. Well, what sort of sum are we talking about here? Half a million?
The new brewery, no. It was about £250,000, something like that, to recapitalise the brewery and make the premises suitable and install it. Still, not huge amounts, but still a substantial amount for us. July the 4th, 2011 was when we moved on to our new site. So we've been here a little over a year and a half and really getting in the swing of it. And the new premises, I think, is probably the size that people always thought we were. People would arrive at our old small unit and think, my goodness, it's tiny. So I think we've grown into our own size, and certainly we're making use of the space. And what's really great about it is that we've got a little bar and there's enough space to invite people in, and we're getting far more of a sort of public face than we ever did.
When you first started, did you have the same team with you then, or were you doing pretty much a one-man band doing the brewing and doing the selling and everything yourself, running around like a headless chicken?
No, the team's been growing all the time. So as the business has grown, I've always invited people in. So it wasn't, I think it was in our second year, I took on our first brewer, Ian Thorne, an Australian guy who's now sadly gone back home, and he really put in many sort of systems in place for the brewery and keeping our consistency and that sort of thing. But it wasn't long before we then got an assistant brewer, Ian, the other Ian, who's still with us. Then we took on Pip in the office, and I have a bookkeeper, and I contract somebody to do all my deliveries. So we've got a great team, and we've recently appointed Steve again as an assistant brewer.
This early days, when you first started off the brewery and started the first batch of brew, where did it go? To local pubs? Did you already have the people set up? Was it a hard sell?
Oh, it's always a hard sell, and it's even harder now. There's so many little breweries. I mean, I think in the 6 years that we've been set up, there's been a further 10 small breweries set up in Gloucestershire alone, who are all competing for the same market. And sales, yes, were all entirely down to my phone effort. So I'd be brewing one day and they'd pick up the phone and ring in the pubs.
In Stroud, were they? Or were they out about further afield?
The majority of our pubs were around Stroud. And, you know, we probably have about 15 very local pubs who still support our beers. But we deliver Gloucestershire-wide now, so in a radius of about 20 miles. So most of our beer goes into Gloucestershire. Occasionally we go into Bristol, and even more occasionally we go into Bath.
And the one in Sweden, I hear, as well.
Oh, we have
international now.
That's right.
Queens of Order Export.
we had an amazing luck there. We had a Swedish distributor discover us through our website, who was really interested in organic beers. And their business was supplying organic cafes and restaurants, which have grown massively. So, yes, we've sent a bit of beer over to him.
So how are you coping with all this competition? Are you trying to sell into new pubs or new areas or restaurants? Where are you trying to take the business to try and get a decent baseline share?
Well, pubs are our core market. I mean, that is our main business, is beer into pubs. So we're always looking to increase the number of pubs that we sell to. However, when we moved here, we were conscious that we wanted to have a good diversity of our market. So as well as pubs, we have bottles. They go through a few wholesalers. We do a lot more direct sales, so people come into the brewery to collect beer for parties or weekend consumption. We're starting to do a few more events. So this year, we will certainly do the Stroud Show again. And a big event for us for the first time will be the Gatcombe Race. We've got a core of really loyal customers who are the backbone of our business. I say a good majority of those are very local and have been, you know, trading with us for the last, you know, up to 6 years, some of them. And then there are pubs that have our beers on a guest basis. Again, that's the way that they trade. They always have guest beers, but they keep coming back.
What about the beer festivals and things like that? Do you have people take it to the
beer? We often have beers in the beer festivals, but they're not huge volumes.
No, you know, no, they're just to show the flag.
It shows the flag, but it's an opportunity for people to try beers who might not have tried it.
You've got your own license here, obviously, because you make beer, but you actually sell it over the bar. You've got your own little cosy bar that we're actually sitting in for this interview. Is that well patronised?
Yes. I mean, the bar started because people collect beer on Fridays to take home. So we thought we may as well have a couple of beers on tap. So we've been doing that from 3 o'clock on a Friday, and people pop in. And we've had an amazing amount of very local people. There isn't a pub in Thrupp. So the core of that is people walking to the brewery. But word has got out now, and I must say, Fridays are incredibly busy down here.
Perhaps you'd have to have a bigger premises. Perhaps the brewery's going to become a sideline in your setting.
Well, the brewery is totally open, so if you come down, you know, you can walk past the fermenters and get a real feel for what we're doing. We try to be as informal as possible, but certainly we're going to have to think about doing something different. But it's very difficult to do anything different because I think what attracts people is how it is.
Cools you this a bit.
Yes, absolutely.
So where are you going to take this business in future then, Greg? Where do you want to see it go?
Well, we thought very hard about this, and certainly I think growth, you know, we've got room to grow at the moment, but we don't want to keep on growing forever. The scale that we're at, if we got up to our capacity, would be about right. What we don't want to do is to have to start trading sort of regionally and nationally with our beers. We want to remain local, and by that I mean selling most of our beer in Gloucestershire and touching on the surrounding counties and delivering it ourselves. And at that scale, also, it's enough to support a team of people that also makes the business sustainable. When it was smaller, I was doing everything myself or with another brewer, and we just could not have a break. Now, if we can just grow a little bit and support our team of 5 or 6 people, there's enough of us to cover for holidays or sickness. We might even start paying ourselves a pension. So at least we can factor that into our business. There is this myth that if you're not growing, you're dying. And I really don't think that's the case. We now have to think of a way that local businesses like ours can be dynamic enough and interesting enough and make enough change at the scale that we are.
The fate of a business like this isn't often in your own hands. It's the changing environment outside.
Yes.
It's the laws on beer, on tax,
yes,
on the demise of pubs and things like this, and you've got to keep moving in that direction. It isn't as though, you know, that there's a consistency of external environment, is there?
No, you're absolutely right. Duty has been going up for, you know, the last 10 years or more. I think Britain alone, the duty paid in Britain is equivalent to 40% of the entire duty taken in Europe. It's absolutely colossal. We pay more tax than our duty on beer or alcohol than anywhere else.
And they still manage to lose all our money.
And we still lose it. And at the same time, pubs are closing because they can't afford that. People can't afford to drink in the pubs at that sort of level of tax, which I think is a real shame, because if you want to tackle problem drinking, I think the only way of doing that isn't by abolishing it or ruling against it. It's about socialising it, and there's no better way of socialising drinking than encouraging people to drink together in a pub in a social setting. So, you know, one of the things that I would really love to see is a duty difference between packaged beers, that's bottles and cans, versus draft beer. And that way, beer drunk in a pub can be at a reduced duty rate, and beer drunk at home in the bottle or the can could be on a higher rate. And I say that even as a producer of bottled beers, I'd rather people drank in the pub than out of our bottles.
Now, are you alone in this, or do you have supporting voices in the industry? Is there an industry body that's lobbying for this?
Actually, I've never heard that particular. I mean, there's a lot of talk about reducing duty, or certainly capping duty so it doesn't go up any further. There's also talk about minimum price on alcohol. Minimum price on alcohol really doesn't affect the trade, because we're talking about really cheap booze. But to have a differential between packaged products, bottles and the pub, I think could make a radical difference.
As a brewer, because you are a brewer now and you concentrate on these range of beers, do you think there will ever be any diversification into things like lager and ciders and things like this?
Yes. I mean, cider is a totally different product. There's lots of cider producers locally already who do a great job. They use different yeast, and certainly there's a lot of wild yeast and things in cider that we don't want to see in our brewery. Lager is an interesting one. We're not set up as a lager brewery, but there's absolutely no reason why we couldn't produce a style of lager. And it's something that I'm interested to do, not on draft, because again, the conditioning and the type of dispense for a lager is quite different. It's sort of often gassed up on the way to the font with carbon dioxide. And lagers on draft in a cask haven't got quite the same sparkle and appeal. But one thing that we could do is a lager in a bottle.
Well, when you think about the range of lagers that are available in places like Belgium, they're imported into this country. Mm. And in this discussion now, it's coming to my own mind, and perhaps even in yours, that there perhaps is a market for a range of organic lagers in this country in the bottle.
I completely agree. There's not very many. There's Sam Smith's that do a lager. I think Freedom Brewery might do an organic lager, or Purity, one of those two. But there's not very many.
No.
And certainly we have a great niche with our organic bottles. And we've got some good wholesalers, and I think an organic lager in a bottle would certainly fit well.
Are all these new microbrews that are springing up, are they all likely to survive? Or do you think some might go to the wall simply because there isn't enough business out there?
Well, I don't think there's enough business out there. I think a lot of people who are setting up microbreweries and any small business, they're enterprising people and will endeavour to do everything they can to keep going. So the result of that is that it's going to be fiercely competitive, quite marginal. There is a limited trade out there, and ultimately some of those breweries are going to decline and disappear. And there's a lot of pressure on price. More and more the sort of competition is around cheap, and it's so tempting if you're not selling beer to start going down that route, and then you'll fail. Mm. You know, you can't support a business by subsidising it. And there's a lot of pressure from pubs. As soon as a pub's offered cheap beer, then of course they know that they can get it, and there's a lot of pressure to do it.
Maybe one of the things to do is to go vertically integrated and get your own pubs.
Well,
or small ones.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that we certainly will have to consider in the future. We talked about, you know, the growth of the brewery. Certainly I wouldn't want to produce any more beer, but that, you know, one of the ways that we could keep things interesting and look at growing the business another way is our own outlets in some way.
Because there's many a village now that's got a pub lost.
Yes.
And starting it up in a small area and asking for a licence might be something acceptable. And you wouldn't have all the overheads of buying a free house that's already established and everything else.
Absolutely, and that's a really interesting point. I mean, I've done a lot of community work in my past life. I worked a lot with community groups around farming and different food systems, so food cooperatives and that sort of thing. In particular, I worked with communities looking to buy farmland. So I worked with one farm in particular, Fort Hall Farm, who bought their farm into trust. And one thing that's really interested me for a long time is looking at community-owned pubs. So if there's any communities out there who are interested in purchasing or resurrecting or managing their own local pub, I welcome a discussion to look at how Stroud Brewery might work in partnership with community pubs and support that process.
That's a good vision, and hopefully someone will pick up on that and be in contact and in touch, because it might be a cheaper way of getting the heart back into some of the villages that have been lost.
Absolutely.
So we've got these community pubs, and you're there off duty, you're on the right side of the bar instead of the wrong side of the bar, and there's a musician in the corner, and he's giving you a bit of entertainment. Who would that be, and what would he be singing?
Well, I have done a lot of travelling, and a lot of travelling in Africa, and in particular I love the music from West Africa, the high life sort of upbeat music. I think I would choose Yeke Yeke by Mori Kanti.
Well, I can't pronounce it, but I'm sure we can find it somewhere. So I'm with Pip Scrivens at Stroud Breweries. Pip, what do you do down here?
I deal with all the customers. I do the sales and all the administration side of the brewery.
So what's it like being in the brewery business?
It smells wonderful. it's very nice. I get to meet all sorts of interesting people, talk to all sorts of interesting people on the phone as well.
Are there any women brewers?
There are definitely women brewers, and they are officially called brewsters. There's a women-only brewery, can't remember the name of it, so there's one that's all run by women.
In the Gloucestershire area or somewhere else in the country?
Further afield, I think she's up north. But there are certainly women brewers around as well.
Well, you might get a brewster in here, you'd never know. Or you could turn into a brewster.
Well, I've done the foundation level, so I've got a bit more to go. Traditionally, it was women brewers, and if you go back to the mead, to days of mead, it was women brewers to start with.
So a typical day is what, taking calls, fielding calls, taking orders?
Orders, phone calls, trying to find new pubs that are able to take our beer, discussing with other breweries about swapping beer with them, and just the general day-to-day running.
That's interesting. When you say swapping with other breweries, you mean Stroud breweries using their outlets?
Yes. So we would swap our beer from one to with them, and then we'll sell their beer down here and vice versa.
So how far afield do you go now? Where's the furthest I'm going to find a bottle of Stroud brewery beer?
Some of it goes out with wholesalers, so we don't know exactly where it ends up. Locally, the farthest pub north is the Ebrington Arms in Ebrington, and we do a run to Bristol once a month as well, so that's our furthest south.
So on the website, you've got an international arm, it says. Is that?
We do. Our bottled beers are in Sweden. They can't get enough of the Marisotter Vintage, which was recently on Jamie Oliver's Food Fight.
How long does a bottle last, then, if you cash condition it?
The Marisotter's got 3 years on it. That's a special one.
Yeah. What's special about it?
It's a single malt and a single hop. It was made with malt grown at Macaroni Farm, just outside Cirencester. And we had the sole rights to the organic variety, and it's the first time an organic one's been grown in a long time. So,
is it a premium beer?
Marisotter is a common malt used by a lot of breweries and a lot of beers, but this was an organic variety, and that was what was new to the scene. We haven't had organic version of it for so long, so it was to bring it back.
And can you get that locally now, is it for export only?
Oh no, you can buy that, you can get that in Centro and Vintners in Stroud and various other bottle shops locally.
Was it like a limited production run and then you stopped
as much of the crop as we had? So it's 2011, it says on it. It was brewed in 2012, but the crop was grown in 2011.
Well, you've certainly got quite knowledgeable.
It's fascinating, especially about beer itself and the differences between the different beers. I never knew it was so exciting.
Do you have to taste them all as they come out?
Always, especially if it's a new one.
Well, on this hospitality side, then, do you get involved in that as well, or are you just primarily in the back room?
No, I do that side as well. We're hoping, it got cancelled last year, we're hoping to do Gatcombe this year, fingers crossed, for the British Festival of Eventing. So that was our first foray into having an outside bar that was completely us. So fingers crossed we'll have good weather this year and the event will go ahead and we get to go out in the public and tend our wares. We do join up with some other craft brewers, local ones. There's about 8 of them in the area in Gloucestershire, and we often do joint bars with them. So we do like Cheltenham Food and Drink Festival, things like that, which is quite nice because then we all help each other. And it's nice for us to meet up and mix with each other.
Do you mix with the Gloucester breweries people, or is it mostly the Stroud and the Five Valleys brewery? Because there's a little brewery in Gloucester, isn't there?
They're not part of the Craft Brewers Association. So the ones I've dealt with personally, there's 7 or 8 of them in Gloucestershire Craft Brewers. So it's they've got Cotswold Springs, Seven Vale, places like that. So
why are they called craft brewers? Are they in a certain guild? Is it a certain way they do
it? It's the size.
Size of the people? I don't mean physical size, I mean number of people.
No, it's down to the size of the output. We're still classed as craft because we're of the size we are, because there are only 20 brewer's barrels, but lot of them are more 5 or 6 brewer's barrels.
And each brewer's barrel, I think, is 1,500 pints, isn't it?
I work it out as 4 firkins, and there's 72 pints to a firkin.
So a brewer's barrel is equivalent to about 1,500 pints. So you're getting through 20 of those, are you?
We're capable of brewing 20 a week.
And is the output at full stretch now? Or?
No, not at all. We've increased since we've moved here, and we're just gradually looking to find more pubs same ethos as us to take our beer and gradually grow. And then when we get to capacity, we shall not increase anymore. We will just maintain.
Be a nice happy size.
Exactly, to keep it personal, keep it local.
That's good. Where are you heading for next geographically? You've covered all the territory around here that you want to go for.
We have a lot of regular customers, but we want to fill in some of the gaps. So Cheltenham, the outskirts of Gloucester, and towards Cirencester are our name. We've got lots of pubs in different places, but it'd be nice if you could stop somewhere in between as well.
And is it on draft or is it all bottles?
No, draft mainly to the pubs. The bottles is actually our sideline.
It's the same contents, is it?
The bottles are all organic, whereas the draft beers aren't all organic. Some are, some aren't.
So all bottled strawberry beer is organic
and vegan.
What's the difference between vegan and organic? And explain vegan for me.
Vegan is no animal products. I'm not specific on what actually qualifies, but there's no animal products in it if it's vegan.
And it's marked on the bottles as vegan?
Yes, it's registered with the Vegan Association.
Do you actually go out helping the selection of the hops, or do you not get involved in that side of it at all?
We don't physically go and select them. We know which types we like, and depending on which recipes, if we're doing a new one, then they might like to try... like the current favourite at the moment is New Zealand hops. They seem to be quite popular.
Why is that, do you think?
They're just a new variety. They've been growing them for a while, so it's a new flavour to come to the market. It's got a different twist to it, and people are doing single hop beers just to experience so you can get the full flavour. So we've did a special one-off. We did Resolution was a new beer in January. And that was a single hop, and we did that with, I believe it was Challenger. So people have enjoyed it because they get to experience the flavour of one hop. And it's a current trend at the moment with breweries.
In order to satisfy the market, have you got to keep inventing the wheel or inventing the beer every 6 months or something like that to keep turning over the taste buds?
We have our core beers that people know and like, and it's just make sure that we maintain them and that they're still fresh and people are happy. But then there are other trends, and the landlords will tell me, for example, they'll ask me, have I got something pale below 4%? And I'm getting asked that one quite a bit, so we will be having a new brewer soon, head brewer, and when he comes he will be designing a new beer for us. We have a name for it, but we don't have the recipe yet.
The beer yet.
But we know it's going to be pale, and we know it's going to be under 4%, because that is a demand. A lot of the pubs are wanting the lower alcohol percentage.
Why is that,
percentage.
Do you think?
I think it's because somebody would be happier to have a couple or three of the lower percentage and still be standing the high percentage.
Yeah.
They can't... it makes for a shorter evening.
Do you have to bond any of your beer at all? You've got to pay duty on it here?
Yes. When we take it to bottling... Then it has to be sent to a bonded warehouse. It's classed as a bonded. We are a bonded place.
You don't
place.
Bottle here, then?
We don't bottle. It goes to Branded Drinks, which is a company over in the Forest of Dean. So it's still fairly local. Mm-hmm. And
they take, what, your barrels, shove
no,
in a pipe?
No, we have special collapsible containers, giant bag-in-boxes, as it were, and they go on a forklift in the back of a lorry, and then they come back all beautifully labelled and packed up for us.
Is it the same amount coming back as goes out?
Well, occasionally there are some discrepancies when the labels get jammed, but no, we have to count it in and count it back, obviously.
It's like the Falklands War plane. I counted it all out, and I counted it all back, and it was not the same.
Exactly.
What's the difficulties of a job like this for you, then?
It's more the pub industry is the issue. They are finding it very tough out there. We've lost quite a few pubs last year through being closed. But then we've also gained some pubs as well that have restarted or they've reopened as opposed to just new customers. And the biggest challenge is for the landlords and the finance side of it and all the tax and levies put on them. The Royal Oak at Tetbury, which we will be supplying, they're going to be hopefully opening in May, but they've been in contact with us since before Christmas. They've had a tremendous amount of work done on the building. So it's quite nice to see some of these pubs having life breathed back into them.
Is it a hard sell selling new beer? Is there a lot of people knocking on landlords' doors and saying, look, take my beer?
Some of the pubs tell me that they have up to 50 calls a week from different breweries.
So do you think the market's getting satiated? There's too many craft brewers in the market?
There is a significant number of craft breweries, and it's always growing. It's nice that it's a growing thing because people are actually more interested in ales than perhaps they were. And there's... It is quite a saturated market to some point, but then it's also quite nice to have variation and variety. Obviously, we'd like everyone to drink our beer and nothing else, but that would be a little selfish.
How is the industry structured then? I mean, one hears about the giants. I mean, all the old names have gone. They've all been taken over by Diageo. Whitbreads have gone, and all of them gone, and they've all been sucked and hoovered up. And it was Camera and people like yourselves that's managed to sort of come in on the left field. But... primarily now, do they still own 95% of the market, the big brewers, your Tom Smiths and people like that? Or are they getting regulated against?
It's different. I don't know what one should say politically correct here, but I
well,
wouldn't class John Smith's as a
drop
of beer. It's not hand-pulled, for example. No. It comes through a tap. It's not the same thing. A lot of pubs, it's more the people that own the pubs is the issue, the giants... the enterprises and things like that that control what the pubs are allowed to have. A lot of it's price conscious, but
Too many tumbled houses, you're saying, basically.
Yes, people aren't allowed to choose what they have behind their bar so much. It's all down to numbers.
I don't know whether or not, I haven't been keeping a close eye on it, but whether or not that's been the subject of any parliamentary scrutiny and moves to actually break them up, or whether they've just, it's been done and they've resisted it and they've still got the status quo, because it does seem to me almost like a monopoly.
It is, but then you have lots of, we've got some nice new chains opening up that are independent. For those that can manage it, to set up their own free house, that's the way to go financially. I do feel very sorry for the landlords. And if they start to do well, then they put the rents up. It's very difficult for them as to gauge it just right.
I've often wondered why, when you've got a pub closing in a village, or it's closed in a village, I mean, pubs didn't start off as major chains. They started off with one or two people actually asking for licences.
You look in Stroud and see how many buildings have that castle tile on the front, and it literally would have been somebody's front room was operating as a bar.
Now I'm wondering why that doesn't take hold again now, because there must be, if it's a small market and you're small overheads in your own house and you can buy craft brews, why it actually hasn't gone into the minds of people to perhaps start their own little pub and ask for a licence in a location.
Yes, well, it would be interesting to see that. The thing to watch, the pubs that seem to be more successful are community-based pubs. They're actively involved in the community. They're doing things for the community. And, you know, we've got knit and natter clubs at some of the pubs and things like that, and sewing on a Sunday. So they're trying to do what I suppose a village hall might have done. It's now part of the... And they seem to be the ones that
are thriving. So which sort of pubs are doing that in this area now then?
The Prince Albert up at Rodborough. You've got the Crown Sceptre, Horns Road.
Well, sounds as though some pubs are making the effort, Pip. What about bringing the Dubliners in as well?
And it's all for me grog, me jolly, jolly grog. All for me beer and tobacco. For I spent all my tin with a lassie drinking gin. Far across the western ocean I must wander. Well, now where are me boots, me noggin boots? All gone for beer and tobacco. For the uppers are worn out, and the soles are kicked about, and the heels are looking out for better weather. And it's all for me grog, me jolly, jolly grog. All for me beer and tobacco. For I spent all me tin with a lassie drinking gin. Far across the western ocean I must wander. Where is me shirt, me noggin shirt? All gone for beer and tobacco. For the collar is all wore, and the front it is all tore, and the tail is looking out for better weather. And it's all for me grog, me jolly, jolly grog. All for me beer and tobacco. For I spent all me tin with a lassie drinking gin. Far across the western ocean I must wander. I'm sick in the head, and I haven't been to bed since I came ashore with me plunder. I'm seen centipedes and snakes, and full of pains and aches, and I think I'll make a path for way out yonder. And it's all for me grog, me jolly, jolly grog. All for me beer and tobacco. For I spent all me tin with a lassie drinking gin. Far across the western ocean I must wander.
You can't have any beer if you haven't got a brewer. And I'm with Ian French, who is actually the assistant brewer at Stroud Breweries. You always been in this trade, have you?
No way. I joined the army from school, and I spent 6 years in the army. And then from then I went into the power industry before moving to Stroud, which was about 10 years ago.
And then what, straight into brewing?
No, I had started up a little landscaping company.
So did you start your brewing career, in inverted commas, actually at Stroud Breweries, or before then, did you have to go on a course and stuff like that?
I got interested in the brewery, and I'd met Greg at social functions, and he was a keen home brewer at the time, and we got chatting, and I was probably one of many people that said, oh, you should, this beer's great, you should...
turn into a mass production.
Yeah, exactly. Probably been thinking about it for a time anyway, and eventually when he did, I think he was going for good few years before a position became available, and I thought, well, I'm getting a bit old for landscaping, so
Is it finger in the air stuff, or is there a book on how do you make your beer? I mean, take us through the process.
Yeah, it's very much like sticking to a recipe.
So the physical side of it is pretty much repetitive, as any home brewer will probably know, but of course the magic of it comes in the selection of the ingredients, and you get involved in that area? The types of hops and the types of malt and things like this. I mean, why do they have such a definitive taste on the outcome?
The different malts and the different hops give different characteristics to whatever beer you're producing. So if you, for instance, wanted to produce a certain beer, you'd have a rough idea of what you wanted it to be in your head. The first hop you add to the boil is the one that gives the bitterness. Depends on what characteristic of beer you're after, designates how bitter you want it to be, and you add certain hops accordingly.
I mean, what about the darker beers, the porters and the ones like that? How do you get that dark taste?
You might put a black malt in, or a chocolate malt, which has been toasted or roasted at the maltings, and you don't need a lot of that at all to make your beer very dark.
Too much, you end up horrible to drink, I would think.
Well, yeah, because it's been toasted and burnt, there's a lot of the sugar that's in the malt has been destroyed. There's not a lot of goodness or extract to be got out of it. It's just the colour.
So all the sweetener, all the sugar that's required to actually do the fermentation with the yeast is all in the malt, and all the malt. You don't add any extra sugar or anything like that, do you? Or just add any sugar at all?
The only time you'd ever add sugar is if you haven't obtained your extract. And there's a certain extract that you need to take out of the malt in order for those sugars to turn into alcohol, the yeast. You're aiming for a certain gravity in the unfermented wort, as it's called. If you don't reach that gravity, then you'd add sugar. But that would be a mistake. That would be born of a mistake.
Do you have to take specific gravities as you're preparing each beer? Or do you know, historically now, from your little black book, that if you put X amount of hops, X amount of malt, X amount of yeast in, and Y amount of water, you will always come up with the same specific gravity, which is the sellable specific gravity? Is that how it works?
Pretty much. It's more down to the malt than any other ingredient. Based on your sheet that you get with your malt, what the extracts are, and they don't usually change from one crop. Well, one crop is normally very consistent. The next year, that crop from the same field might be slightly different. You keep an eye on the extract that you get from the lab.
Different strains and varieties of yeast, does that have an impact on the different tastes of the beer?
It can do, yes. There are many different yeasts. We usually stick with one, and that's done us very well as a yeast.
I have heard, in fact, that some of the brews that I remember when I was younger, the red barrels and the India ales and stuff like that, although they might have gone off the market, they actually still keep the yeast alive so that they can redo them again. They can bring them back in again.
Yeah, we did start to do that, and we had some small problems. The yeast strain we were using, it wasn't giving us the amount of consistency we were aiming for. So we went back to dried yeast, and everything was fine. When you're harvesting the yeast out of the fermenter, there's always room for bugs to get in. If everything is not absolutely sterile, you're putting any contaminants into the next brew.
Yes. Here, have you had to chuck stuff out? Does it happen sometimes?
We've got one of the lowest ullage rates that we know of in the brewing industry. So we're doing something right.
What do you use for sterilisation when you've actually finished? Do you put this sort of Camden large Camden tablets about 12 feet across, as you do with the home brewery. I mean, how do you actually sterilise them out? Is it just boiling water or what?
We rinse everything out, and we get most of the contaminants out that way, and then we use caustic? Yeah, and we have a system where we circulate that through the dirty fermenter. We stick 300 litres of water in there and a caustic, and then we circulate it through the system to kill any bugs for about half an hour or more, and then we drain that down after checking that it's done its work, and then we rinse that through, and then we stick another 300 litres of water in and put peracetic acid in.
That process between brews must take, what, a day to do that? Once you've drained off your beer and you know it's gone off to be bottled up, and now you've got to clean the thing out, is that half a day or a day process doing that?
We do it all in a staggered type of regime where everything gets done in the day. We don't have to do 20 barrels in a day. We can we can brew as little as 12 and a half barrels. January time, it's slow. Then it picks up in the spring towards the summer.
Are you brewing to order then?
We've got our regular pubs, but our occasional pubs. It's grown to the extent that we now have a capacity for X amount of beer per week.
Do you experiment on new brews? I mean, there's one that your colleague was telling me about, which has been shipped over to Sweden, which has got a 3-year shelf life, organic beer. But I didn't know whether that came from your predecessor or whether or not you've actually experimented yourself.
I've had input into what we're doing with our current brews, because we do tweak them.
To achieve what?
I can't give away too much about what we put into our beer.
But all right, we won't go into trade secrets. But, I appreciate that.
The
outcome is that it's a different taste. Is that what you're trying to do?
For instance, Tom Long is one of our second best selling beer. Most people know that we put orange in.
Oh, I see. Bit of flavouring of some sort.
So we might up the orange slightly.
Yeah, just to give it a bit of kick.
Just so that orange comes through a little bit more, gives it a bit more character, or in the organic caramel in there, which gives it a caramelly sort of flavour.
The most popular selling beer is what, a light ale or a dark ale?
In the industry at the moment.
No, in your particular business
budding
here. And why is that, you reckon? Because it's just middle of the road.
And it slips down really easy. and it's 4.5%, so, you know, it's in between strong and light, really. It sort of hits most palates.
So you're going to stay in the brewing business, are you?
I think so, yeah. Well, I'm getting involved in the sales now.
Are you?
We've grown to an extent where, like, natural growth over the last few years without doing too much in the sales department.
Now you've got to knock on the door.
Now we've got to stretch that boundary a little bit further. More pubs, regular pubs.
Maybe you should do some vertical integration and buy your own pubs.
Well, yeah, maybe we should. Mm. And I think we've talked about that, but in the current climate, we need to generate a bit more profit before we can start. Yeah.
And also, I think your colleague also said that when you reach a certain level, as far as she was aware, you wanted to stay at that level. You didn't want to go falling over yourselves by overreaching yourselves.
No, I mean, I think a lot of industries, not just the brewing industry, little companies grow too quickly. They put themselves in a position where the bubble bursts. Our ethic at Stroud Brewery is to serve the local community and put all our profits back into the local area, trying to keep things sustainable, you know, on a local scale. So that's the aim. We don't want to go countrywide. I think we just want to stay in the southwest. Just push our boundaries out a bit further for sales-wise. But once we've got a certain number of pubs, we want to serve those pubs and do the best we can.
Do you get the trade and standards people, the food inspection people, come around? Is that somebody that knocks on your door occasionally to see what the things are being kept to a standard?
I can't remember anyone like that visiting, apart from Stroud District Council Food Hygiene Department. I don't know what her exact title was, but she came to look at our kitchen facilities before we started selling pizzas outside.
Oh, so nothing to do with the beer then?
Nothing to do with the beer whatsoever, no.
It's probably too frightening for them to actually try and find anything. A good life then, it's a good job and it's like doing it.
It's a physical job, brewing, you know, days brewing, you know you've done some work, you know.
So when you finish at the end of the day and you're sitting at a bar sampling your own products, and someone snaps a bit of music on, what would you like to hear come over?
Sweet Jane, Lou Reed, from Rock and Roll Animal.
Having had a comprehensive tour of Stroud Brewery, I decided to go up the hill to the Crown and Sceptre and speak to Rodda Thomas and get his views on how he runs a community pub.
I think the trick is that you've got to make everybody welcome, really. You've got to make the knitters welcome on a Tuesday night. We have our knitting group. We've got our gang of bikers that come in here. We've got book club. There's all sorts of different
sort
groups.
Sort of a meeting point, yeah, then, rather than just a drinking point.
Yeah, exactly. That as well, yeah.
Yeah. And some legal services, I believe you did once.
Oh, yeah. Once a month. The second Thursday of the month, we have WSB solicitors from Stroud do a free legal advice session up here, which last month was very well attended. I think they got about 15 or 16 clients in here. And there's three or four of them up here, and they'll do everything from divorce to property law to disputes
handy.
Or whatever,
that's
you know.
Handy. Was any of this going before you took it over?
No.
It all up?
No, well, I was approached by WSB. I can't claim the credit for that one. But
no. But the idea of having different groups in and having it as a focal point for the community.
Well, it's sort of an organic thing. It does itself. People, they come into the pub, they see the big table and say, that'll be good for a meeting. Stroud Hockey Club, for example, have their monthly meetings on the big table. The big table's used constantly for different groups and different clubs. The Apple Mac users group use it once a month, sit around and have a chat.
Because you get anybody drinking in here.
Well, the thing is, they all buy a drink. They all buy a pint. It's on a quiet Tuesday or a Thursday night.
Good.
It fills the pub.
Were you in the pub business before you came here?
Yeah. I ran the Golden Fleece on Nelson Street for 5 years. Before that, I ran the Woolpack up at Slad for 2 years.
Oh, you're well versed in the business then.
Oh, yeah. And before that, I ran the infamous Pelican down on Union Street.
Did you?
Only for a few months.
Mm. Infamous because you were running it, or infamous for
other reasons? No, it was always infamous before I took it over.
So 15 years in the business, and it's pretty obviously the people sitting this side of the bar, but it'd be interesting to get your view. I mean, what sort of changes have you seen?
Oh, dear. Tax has gone up 42% in the last 5 years. We pay in England 40% of the EC's beer tax, while only consuming 13%. It's completely overtaxed, and the government see us as an EV target. And they're trying to squeeze us out. I don't think the government really want people to go to the pubs, to be honest. They don't want people to sit around and talk. Mm. I think they'd rather they stayed at home. The supermarkets and garages and shops that sell cut price beer haven't done us any favours at all. That's something that the government really ought to look at taxing, possibly with minimum price per unit. It's 45-50p per unit minimum. That might help a little bit. But what people tend to do now is on a Friday and Saturday night, they have three or four drinks at home before they go out to the pub, so they only have to buy one or two pints in the pub.
They're called preloading, isn't it?
Preloading, or the pre-lash, I believe it's called, Terry. It's not something, obviously, I condone, but you know, I know it does happen.
Because if they have too much, it'd be like the backlash, not the pre-lash.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think, then, that the British pub's finished?
It's on its last legs. 5,800 pubs have closed in the last 5 years in England.
But these Tidos has kind of done the trade any good, where they haven't got the flexibility to do what you do.
They're being greedy, the pub codes, and I worked for a pub code myself for 5 years, and it was a nightmare. I'd never work for them again. They're very short-sighted. They tripled my rent at the Fleece. Mm. I'm being squeezed in the middle between the price of the utilities going up and the price of the tax going up and the price that I can realistically charge for a beer. I'm being squeezed down into the middle.
Has numbers gone down then over the last year?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. It's been declining at least for the last 5 years anyway.
Because you do a lot of function up here, beer festivals and things.
Well, we have a couple of beer festivals here a year, yeah. The big Outer Fringe Festival in the end of August, beginning of September. That'll be going on again this year. You've got to keep doing events. You have to keep doing things to keep people coming.
We're sitting having a party now, we're having a pint of beer, and you're listening to a track of music. So what track would you like?
I'm going to go for Paul Weller, for his latest album Sonic Kicks, and the track I like best is My Garden's Overgrown.
Bobby's off on holiday, away across the sea, setting up his easel, a new scene to see. Says that he's had enough of standing in the rain. Now he's looking for the blue light, European pain. Did you know your garden's overgrown? What a show. Meeting all these pretty girls, singing golden hair. He's in touch with the painter's mind, sees something just there. Drinking wine in the Moulin Rouge, sipping coffee in Berlin. Mind taking the color lights in the city they cast in. He could see the writing on the wall. Did you know your garden's overgrown? What a show. There were times you wished the world would fade just into sight.
Our Business by Terry Meekin. It's Our Business are documentaries which get under the hood of companies and people to find out who they are, what they do, and how they do it. To make the colour, depth, and detail of your business available 24/7 worldwide, contact terrymeekin.com. You can also visit www.terrymeekin.com, where you can hear and download more documentaries in the series.